overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am overflowing.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
So I invite you to place your attention on your breath. And notice how the breath is breathing you. So there's a glorious opportunity to surrender into that which is effortlessly offering itself to us, each one of us. As we focus our attention on something as simple and as benign as the breath, troubled thoughts and emotions can just kind of fall away. They may rise up again, but if we don't follow that thought, if we don't engage that emotion, by its very nature, it just moves through us. And we become the space in which life happens. There's a liberation in knowing that we don't have to follow addictive thought patterns. We don't have to analyze what is ours to do or what should I think about such and such. We can just consciously breathe. And in that conscious breath, we discover a peace, an abiding peace that is always there. Not a peace that we get, but a peace that is. And then we can allow that peace to be our default mechanism. When the mind wants to run away with a thought pattern, when the emotions seem all out of control, with a simple exhalation, we can find our default mechanism is this peace that is at the core of everything, a peace that says all is well. All is well. As we rest in that place together, we become a force for peace. We become the frequency of peace. And we can surrender into that and allow for it to assist us on this journey as we navigate the tides of change. There is that which is in harmony, in a natural flow, and we are that flow. This presence, this no mind, is emerging with every breath. This universe is alive with presence, and we are this presence that is alive. We all share the same presence, the same aliveness. The hawk shares it, the trees share it. One life. Unfolding itself through every breath that breathes its creation. So we come here this Sunday to remember who we are, to invite that remembrance to assist us as we take the next step, oftentimes not knowing where we're going, what the outcome is, how things are going to ultimately be, because we have no normal anymore. And in that death of normality, we discover something, a thread, a continuity, a cohesiveness in something as simple as the breath. I hear Goethe say in my heart, "What is God but a simple essence, the cost of which is nothing less than everything?" So if we would know this thing called God, this thing called presence, this thing called essence, we must open to it and allow it, investigate it, and realize that it's always there. All we get to do is be it. So with this awareness, I invite you to open your eyes. Join us in this beautiful sanctuary. Everybody's out there with their mask on, looking so respectful. And that's why we wear the mask, is to respect one another. I'm taking mine off so I can do this speech so that you can hear me perhaps a little better. But we have the safe distance, and thanks to Jody, who put ribbons on the chairs. You know, I still hear Andrew Cuomo. He said in New York City, he says, "We're smart, we're tough, and we're united." And I think that's a beautiful attitude to have. We're smart by respecting one another. We're tough because we still show up for life. We don't run away. And we're united in this. There's something about coming together, even in these troubled times, that is very sustaining for me. So yeah, you're my pack. And Jody reminds me, we're pack animals. We need each other. And this was a really strange week for me. You know, I'm talking this month on navigating the tides of change. And I want to be relevant in the message, because we are going through a lot of changes. And this week, we found out that Trey, my husband's oldest sister, has cancer of the tongue. And she had been having problems with her mouth for a very long time. And she's like so many people, she didn't go to the doctor. And he pressured her, because he's kind of a pushy brother. And she finally went to the doctor, the ear, nose, and throat doctor. And they said, "You have a tumor on your tongue." They biopsied it. It's cancer. It may have metastasized. And so they thrust her into three oncologists who don't treat her as a human being. They treat her as a symptom and a problem to be fixed. And even with her in the room, they talk about all these draconian things about cutting off her tongue, removing her voice box. And she's 75 years old. And my partner, who, you know, we're entangled with one another. You can't help it. They're brothers and sisters. And she's a single mom with her dog, Henry. And then the concern is, what happens to Henry when Susan goes into the hospital? And does she go into palliative care? Is it time for hospice? All the questions arise. Has she been informed as to her plight? And so as they're navigating through these troubled times, I, as the minister, as the husband, said, "I can offer you the peace. I can offer you that embracing space when sometimes we can't necessarily control things out there or fix things out there. We can ride the waves of change." My beloved Lisa Ferraro does what she calls Soul Call Ministries, and she does interviews, and she interviewed Jim Lockhart in Lyon, France. Zoom is amazing. So here he's in Lyon, France, and she's in Ohio, and they're doing a 15-minute interview. And he shared with her, during these troubled times, he says, "Whenever something comes into my life, I realize that it's mine to own." And it was helpful for him to say that, even in France, because when you have something like a diagnosis, it's not about pretending that it doesn't exist. It's about trying to meet it in a skillful, loving, nurturing sort of way. You know, it's very helpful in teaching this class on Wednesdays, because people like the Dalai Lama, he said, if your religion doesn't have kindness at the core of it, it's not worth having as a religion. And so he speaks about being kind, being compassionate, and being tolerant. So what if it's something as simple as that, no matter what life brings us, to just be kind and speak the truth? Well, this is not, like Susan said, you know, I guess it's, she said, "I'm really screwed." I'll use the word screwed. That was her way of saying it. You know, being me is not the best thing to be on the planet right now. And she had a little chuckle. She's at least facing it. She's not pretending that it doesn't exist, as she was doing for a long time. And then they're having conversations. What would be the best thing for Henry? How can we reduce the pain so that you're not suffering? how can we make it so that maybe you can stay at home and we can have nurses come in and check out? So all this investigation is taking place as they attempt to resolve it in a mindful way. Also this week, I received a phone call here at the center, and you know, it's pretty quiet. I come down here during the week. It feels like a ghost ship. I'm walking around the sanctuary, my office and the things, and I go into my office and there's one message on the phone. I thought, somebody from the church needs help. And so I pushed the button, and it was the girl that I dated in high school over 50 years ago. She's tracked me down. She's found me here in Huntsville, Alabama. And she ended the call with, "I love you. Please call me back." So I said, well, maybe I better come out of the closet because it's been over 50 years. And so I called her. She lives in Reno, Nevada. And we had almost an hour-long conversation. It's as if we met as where we left off. You know, she went off to college. I went off to college. She got married. I came out of the closet. And we hadn't really talked for each other in over 50 years. And it was just so meaningful. It's as if we had a resonance that never went anywhere. It was still there. And I was, I didn't realize that, you know, we get older. And she, so one of her questions was, how in the hell did you ever get to Alabama and become a minister? And as I attempted to try to encapsulate over 50 years of evolution, I realized that it was just a natural emergence, which is kind of leading me to the title of today's talk. There was something within me that wanted to emerge from the time I was little. And it was the expression of a jubilant to behold in soul. And even when I was in ninth grade and I would do Shakespeare, and she used to say I should become an actor. Maybe she's the reason I went into acting. And Polonius says to Laertes, his son, "To thine own self be true, and it must follow as the night, the day, thou canst not be false to anyone." And so as a young boy in ninth grade, there was some calling of the soul to be true to yourself, whatever that means. And for me, it meant dropping out of law school and becoming a dancer, or whatever that means. It meant dropping out of dance and going into horticulture. It meant dropping out of landscaping and starting taking classes at this crazy center in Atlanta, where I was realizing how screwed up I was. I was a mess. I was going through a midlife crisis at age 30 because I didn't know who the heck I was. And in going there, something was nurtured, something was fostered, and it began to flower within me. And it's still flowering. It hasn't stopped. It's the jubilant and beholden soul that we all share. So what if, in my attempt to tell Tink how I evolved, I said it was just a natural emergence of something that was always there. And it's still coming through me in a natural emergent sort of way at 71 years of age. There was a book, the reason I call this title Emergence for this week, was there was a book called Emergence by Barbara Marx Hubbard. And this is a woman that recently made her transition last year. She was, I think, 92 years old. And in her book Emergence, she talked about the emergence of what she called the essential self. I've taught many ministerial classes, and in those ministerial classes, we have this class that we teach before they study science of mind, and that class is called Living the Essential Self. Jody took it. I think Gloria G took it. And in essence, and it came from Barbara Marx Hubbard's inspiration, there is this essence self, that if you do everything and you fail to discover that, you could call it your soul, that it must arise within us. And you know, we use at the very beginning of Living the Essential Self a little book called Jonathan Livingston Seagull by Marcus Bach. And the book starts off with the story of a bird. He says, start by knowing that you've already arrived. That very thing that we all share is already there. So we get to excavate it. But after Barbara Marx Hubbard wrote this book called Emergence about living the essential self, then she wrote a new book, and it's called The 52 Codes, whereby we can become what she calls homo universalis. And at age 89, she wrote this last book of her life, where she tried to create a school for this emergent self, this essential self, to flower within creation. 52 different ways to excavate this self, to bring it into the world, this homo universalis. And she came to this deep realization that we are all evolving into this new order of being on the planet. And it's imperative right now. And what the homo universalis, the universal self, it goes through all creation, and it follows a path of emergence. So yesterday when I was researching it, I couldn't find her book. Isn't that funny? When you're looking for the book, you can't find it. So I thought, I'll just type in emergence on YouTube. Well, there's a theory called the emergence theory, and it comes out of quantum mechanics, and it's called the theory of everything. And basically, it boils down to you and I are energy patterns. We're a hologram in a holographic universe. It's more spiritual than any religion. Science now sounds more like spirituality, that we are energy centers, frequency things, and we are the frequency of the divine unfolding. So after I got my mind blown away by reading about quantum mechanics, and I thought I can't do a talk on that because I'm first grade level there, I went to a YouTube video then on Richard Rohr, who is one of my heroes. And Richard Rohr talked about his latest book at the time, and it was called The Answer to the Trinity. And it was all about the original church forefathers, how they likened the nature of divinity to the Trinity, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And he says, Father would be this transcendent energy. It's not a man in the sky. And he says, we've got to get past that old-time religion, which is like a pyramid with God sitting on the top, judging everybody down here. He says, that is not what Jesus was pointing toward. He says, God is this living presence, this transcendent essence that lives within all creation. And he says, the nature of this presence is the Trinity. Then it moves through form. It moves through you and me. That would be the Son. And the Holy Spirit was the energy of the divine. And he said they would liken it like flames or sparks of divinity, or the descending bird, the dove, that would descend, spirit descending. So these all three aspects are a part of what we are. In his little book called Just This, which is one of my favorites, he talks about each one of us is undergoing the emergence of God within ourselves. And here's how he put it in his beautiful, in his Franciscan ways. He says things like this. Your life is not about you. You are about life itself. Now, last week I spoke about having a conversation with life. What if this thing that we all share, this living universe, it comes in the form of hawks that speak to Jody in the beautiful treatment that she did at our revealing service. It comes in the form of trees, which some people look to trees and they're preaching their gospel. It's not about you, it's about life. And you are an instance of a universal and even an eternal pattern. Each one of us is an eternal pattern, a universal pattern, seemingly separate, but not really. We are what the Buddhists call emptiness. And the emptiness means there's no separate self, there's no me. There's just this emptiness. And Ajahn Chanti's very first book was called Emptiness Dancing. And so what does this life force do? It dances, it expresses, it reveals, it moves, it lives through each one of us because it's a living universe and it's an eternal pattern. That means it was never born and it never dies. So he says this one life that many of us call God is living itself in you and through you and as you. Now people get burned at the stake and crucified because that's called heresy, to say that I am one with God. But the truth is, if there is only God, how could you be anything other than that? And you know how humble you have to be to know the truth of what you are. So he goes on to say, this realization is an earthquake in the brain. It's a hurricane within the heart. And it's a Copernican revolution in the mind. And a monumental shift in consciousness. Now, Richard Rohr speaks about paradigm shift, which was a name came out of the 60s by a man named Kuhn. He said, it's imperative that we have a paradigm shift. We're seeing a paradigm shift on our planet right now. This COVID-19 has brought this to a global realization that it's not just an American thing, it's global. Racism is not just an American thing, it's global. They're having protests in England about racism. We have systemic racism in the world. So could this be a paradigm shift in that? You know, some people can't even say the word Black Lives Matter. It's all lives matter. No, we have to, if gay people are being killed, you have to say gay lives matter. It's important. And if women are being, women's lives matter. Muslim lives matter. We can't be afraid. And he says, we are all undergoing God. I like that. We're undergoing God. God's waking up on the planet. Can you let it wake up within you? What would your life look like? You know? You'd say things like, when the myth of romantic love dies and we have a romantic love around God, then the true God begins. Then the true love begins. So what if we get to see God in the in-between times? God helping us through our diseases, through our suffering, through the dark times. Wow. Not just some wrathful man that sits on a cloud and has favorite people that he cherishes. No, it's a living dynamic that goes through us. So when we're, he says we're undergoing God, whose supreme job is oneing. Isn't that a beautiful word, oneing? There's only one here. The oneing of all reality. And he said, oneing is a lovely word that I borrow from Lady Julian of Norwich from the Middle Ages. She described the process of overcoming dualism, which means two, and divisions, artificially created by the ego and the mind. I've been reading this wonderful compilation of 26 essays on non-dualism. And non-dualism basically says there's two kinds of people on the planet, those who think they're two and those who don't. In non-duality, it's all one. And in this non-dual world, this oneness awakens within the individual, you know, where maybe they'll feel they're merging or dissolving in some cases with their environment. And then they realize there's no separate me from the environment. And this oneing, this realization of our oneness arises when it's ready to arise. For some, it arises with animals. Some, it arises with trees. For me, it was a rock or a flower. So he says, this should be an enormous weight off your back. All you can really do is agree to joyfully participate in this world. Life, to joyfully participate in life. Life in the spirit will feel like being caught much more than being taught about any particular doctrine. You find yourself, like Rumi says, all swimming in the ocean of love ends in drowning. In other words, there's no you anymore. There's just the love. There's just the presence. There's just the awake awareness. Adam has on his license plate, no mind. And I remember when I heard Eckhart Tolle say, it's only the local mind that creates the anxiety and the suffering, because me and my opinions and my judgments and my preferences. But he said, imagine if the no mind were running the show in your life. He said, how free you'd be. You couldn't direct it with your thoughts, because it, by its very nature, it doesn't believe in thought. It's the field of awareness underneath thought. Yes, thoughts arise, but thoughts are, they're instruments of the ego. That's all they are. So, and thoughts are very creative. But when the no mind's in operation, wow, what kind of thoughts would arise? Huh. Loving thoughts, maybe? Creative thoughts? Maybe the universal mind would start revealing itself? We have a poster in the men's bathroom. None of you women have probably seen it because you don't go to the men's room. But it says, it's a big photograph of Albert Einstein with his curly hair. It's got hair like Jody's. And he said, I don't want to know what man thinks. I want to know what God thinks. So what if it's possible to move into the non-local mind, into the divine mind, into the divine imagination, and let it inspire us? And it doesn't speak in the language of words. So one of Eckhart Tolle's books was called Stillness, which he called the language of God. And he said everything else is a poor translation. So could we listen to the stillness within ourselves, to that thing he calls the voice? And lastly, he says this, henceforth, your very motivation and momentum for the journey in life is toward holiness or wholeness. It's simply an immense gratitude for already being there. And then I wrote a big yes. You're already there. It's not something you get, it's something you are. And so then we get to be it. We get to be God, experiencing itself. Another name for it could be called consciousness. Consciousness awakens to itself. Consciousness becomes conscious that you're conscious, that you're the witness of the thoughts. And it comes in general, beautiful, loving, sweet ways. And that to me is this evolution into homo universalis, into this higher order of being. And how we get there is our own journey. One of the big inspirations for me, and I'm doing this class, is this book called Drinking from the Rivers of Light by Mark Nepo. And he's saying the same thing, to access this divine intelligence that's always showing itself. And for him as a writer, it came through writing. For artists, it would come through their creative expression. Rupert Spira, another non-dual teacher, he is he works with pottery. And he says, when I do my art, it's as if God is moving through my hands. I feel so connected. I know Jude feels the same way when she does her pottery. And he has this beautiful way of talking about how the universe reveals itself. And he says, one notion that speaks to the uncovering of the divine, the emergence of the divine within each one of us, is Michelangelo's sense that a statue is already within the stone, and that rather than create the statue, Michelangelo's task was to figure out a way to release the beauty that was inherent within the stone. The legendary sculptor would carve away the excess marble to reveal the statue that was already waiting in the block of the uncut stone, as if he were freeing a prisoner from the deep. Giorgio Vasari, the biographer of Michelangelo, and so many Renaissance artists compared Michelangelo's sculpting process to someone pulling a beautiful form from underneath the water. The form is complete, but it's out of view until it's lifted into the world. So when Tink asked me how I became a minister, I think, well, what if I was always a minister? But it had to emerge from the stone of David Leonard. There's something that wanted to express its creativity. And it's interesting, my journey was through dance. And then that dance took me into a master's thesis on the anatomy of inspiration, all the while inquiring into how does God express itself through movement, through expression, through art, through beauty, through discovery, through inquiry. It's there, it's hidden. And if you look deeply, you will find it. So this is how Mark goes on to deepen that inquiry around this emergence. He says, in time we discover that everything carries the divine, everything. And it's all here. It's waiting quietly in the open to be manifested by nothing less than the complete surrender of our attention and our care. It's hiding. It wants to come out of hiding. I remember one of my first talks at a seminar. I said, I'm going to out your soul. It's time that we come out from hiding. Our true nature wants to flower. He said, as a young poet, I was always on the look for things to write about. I was concerned with how to manipulate it to squeeze content or context out of a circumstance. But gradually, as I evolved, I came to a place where if I opened myself authentically, something arose from my center, which I term the voice. Emerson called it the Orphic voice. No matter where I go, no matter what I'm looking at, that voice is still there. Wheresoever I go, I see the face of God, from the tree, from the hawk, from the rock. I began to realize that it's not about searching for things to write about, but it's about releasing this divine that naturally waits in everything. It just emerges. It comes out of it. It's showing you every poetry, every painting. It doesn't matter what we write about. If we bring our full being to whatever is before us, then the divine that's carried in those things of the world will reveal itself through us. Huh. Meister Eckhart said, if you can see God in the smallest of things, it's better than seeing an angel. Because God is in the smallest of things. Wheresoever I look, I see the face of God. If you see the face of God everywhere, it's because the face, God is looking through you. Because God would only see itself. Ernest Holmes, at the end of his life, he likened God to love. And he says, love, which is what we are, we're not the lover and the loved. There's the Trinity, the lover, the loved, and the loving. We are the loving. And so in that, Ernest Holmes says, love sees only love, because you see what you are, and only love sees love. So when we know ourselves to be love, oh, and by the way, it's Father's Day today, and so I'll pay a tribute to Ernest Holmes, because he was the father of this teaching, and this teaching was a synthesis of all the great spiritual teachings, because they were all pointing to the same thing, that it's a God of love. And Ernest Holmes said, let the love lead the way, which is this divine emergence, which is what we are, and the law will make the way possible. Once you get out of the myth of romantic love, which is projected on someone else, usually, and I love that line from M. Scott Peck, when the myth of romantic love dies, then the true love begins. I've been with Trey for 45 years, and let me tell you, the myth of romantic love died, I think, in the first 2 years. But then the deepening of love, where you love in the in-between times, in the tough times, when it's not about them being some illusory idea of what the perfect mate would be. In fact, the girl that I dated in high school, her marriage lasted 2 years. She says, how have I succeeded for 45? And I said, well, that's going to be more than just an hour-long conversation. I said, basically, we grew up together, and we loved each other as we evolved and changed and floundered. Glory G's been in a long-term relationship, and that's divine love. It started with romantic love, and then it ended up as a beautiful friendship and a spiritual love, and to support one another, you know, to enhance the soul. Lastly, he says, releasing the numinous quality of spirit that informs everything through our creativity and expression is a way of all art, which leads us to the purpose of all art, which is to enliven our inherent kinship with all things. To experience carves away all that is not essential from us until, like Michelangelo's statues, we are released from our sleep and we're lifted into the world.
Huh.
So we're that which is emerging from the stuff of life to express the truth of what we are in an authentic way. In Gary Zukav's book, The Seed of the Soul, he talks about we have an egoic self, and then we have what he calls the soul. He calls it the seed of the soul, and it's our authentic self. And he said it's imperative in this lifetime to find the authentic self, not the egoic self, which is a creation that we go through when we grow up to become a somebody, but underneath it, there is this eternal essence that we all share. And when we find it in us, we see it in each other, and it wants to express. In the many years I've been here at the center, I was asked, a poet one was coming to Huntsville from the Northeast. He was a friend of Virginia Burroughs. And Virginia asked if he could come and speak at the center and do an evening of poetry readings. And so he came, and he wrote poetry that was really very, very mystical. And later that year, in the mail, in a manila envelope, arrives a little book. And it's a book of poems that he published. And in the back of the book, he wrote a little note, please read the dedication at the back of the book. And at the back of the book, it says, this book is dedicated to David Leonard, whose enthusiasm for my bee poems inspired this collection. I was so moved about his emergence of God through something as simple and as humble as a bee that it blew me away. And I'm going to read that little poem that blew me away in honor of him. His name is Jerry Grubbs, and it's his poem called The Universe is a Bee. Now listen to the nuances, and this is very much like the story of creation. You know, in the beginning God, and God said darkness was on the face of the earth, and then the voice of God said, let there be light. And so this is kind of a takeoff on the story of creation. He says, the universe is a bee, a small golden thing, hovering in the midst of a great darkness, as if straining to let there be light, flickering wings, throwing off sparks. The universe is a bee, and each eye of the bee is a bee, and each wing is a bee. It is a bee of bees, each bee the same, with bees for eyes and bees for wings, and so on. Each spark that flies from its bee wings is a bee of light, a river of light, a river of bees. There are bees hidden in the bees, and bees hidden in the honey. Honey hidden in the bees, hiding in the honey, and hiding in the bees. The bee is the mind serene. That hum you hear now is the bee at the center of everything. In the beginning, night opened a window and let out its own light and called it bee. Nothing was made that was made without bee. And the bee said, let there be hives, and there were hives. And the bees saw that they were good and very good. There are bees hidden in the mountains among the cliffs, hives hidden in the trees, and hives hidden in the ground, and in the rocky places, and in the walls. There is honey hidden in the mountains, and among the caves, hidden in the ground, and in the many places. The bee is a mind that moves in beauty. Ah, the universe is a bee that hovers above the dark flower, taking what it is given and turning it into light. O bee of the universe, he implores at the end, give us thy light necessary to find your dark honey. O bee of the universe, give us thy light necessary to find your dark honey. Now there was the emergence of an awareness through a metaphor as humble and as simple as a bee. And so could each one of us move into a symbol perhaps that shows us there is something hidden within us, within all creation. Let's call it the Christ Spirit. Let's call it an awakened presence. Let's call it an open-hearted awareness. It's hidden within our hearts. It's hidden within our minds. It's in our DNA. And by lowly listening, it begins to preach to us. It begins to show us the way. I hear the Chinook prayer, where these beautiful native people will look to the mountain and they'll say, "Mountain, teach me and show me the way." And then the mountain shows how it's anchored on this planet and it reaches toward the heavens. And then they turn to the trees and they say, "Trees, teach me and show me the way." And this living thing called tree shows us how its roots go deep down into this earth, and yet it too reaches up toward the light. And then it takes the light through its leaves and creates life through photosynthesis. Trees, show me the way. How it works in harmony with the birds. And so you say to the birds, "Teach me and show me the way." And then the birds, who pausing for a while on boughs too slight, feel them give way beneath her, yet she sings knowing she hath wings. So the bird shows us that we can move, that we're not bound when life takes away one form of reality, that we have the freedom to step into a new form of life. We turn to the simple bee that drinks the nectar from the flower. And we say, "Bee, show me the way." And the bee says, "There's so many flowers, so many teachings, so many beautiful ways to express love. Why stay with just one flower when you could be drinking from the whole garden?" Then we turn to the flower and we say, "Flower, teach me and show me the way." And from the emergent consciousness of the flower, it says, "Open your petals." Whereas Jesus would say, "Be like a lily of the field. Notice how they toil not. They don't struggle. Yet Solomon in all his splendor was not arrayed as one of these. Be like a lily." And so as I, the lily, opened the petals of my soul, I do so that some can drink from that nectar. Am I exclusive? Or do I allow anyone who wants to drink? The flower doesn't say it can only be the bee. The butterfly can also drink. The hummingbird can also drink. And so as we say to the flower, "Teach me and show me the way," the flower shows equanimity and love. That we're not here to have a special love, but that we're here to offer that love with equanimity to all who want to drink. And so as we move into this jubilant and the beholden mind, that by its very nature has to be a beginner's mind, then we find ourselves teachable and receptive to something as simple as a bee or a flower or a tree. To know that this planet on which we live is alive, and it's alive with consciousness. It's alive with no mind. And yet that no mind is conscious, is awake. And it speaks a language that only the soul can hear. But it is only the soul that can decipher its messages. And so we speak in metaphor, in myth, in symbol. And then when we realize that we are nobody, we are no object, wisdom begins to flower. It's not about us, it's about life. We hear the teacher say, there is no me that's separate from you. There's only one life. And it appears in its wholeness throughout all creation. And now we're beginning to perceive from a different way, from the wholeness, not from the parts. We're not a separate individual with a bunch of separate cells here, but we're one life expressed in multiplicity. We are this universal human, evolving, emerging, with every breath, closer and closer to understanding But Jesus was pointing toward the Christification of humanity, the awakening of humanity to its spiritual magnificence. And so Ernest Holmes, the founder of this beautiful teaching that we celebrate here in Huntsville, he was merely a weaver of threads. He awoke to a truth that is available to all of us. And he reminded us of the thing we're looking for, we're looking with. The awakened self is right there at the core of our being. And as we become still, as we surrender, as we let go, then we let God do its thing. And Julian of Norwich called this oneing. The one is revealing herself through her creation, and we are the creation. And so we begin to understand this idea of Trinity. This idea of Father is a transcendent energy that we all share. We are the manifestation of that, the daughters and sons of God, through the energy and the power of the Holy Spirit. So things become far more fascinating. Time and space fall away, and we are in the eternal moment. We are in the here and now, and all there is the here and now. And then the past informs the present, and the future informs the present, because the past and the future don't exist other than in the mind. Everything exists now. And so could we be informed by the future that this new, evolved species is imperative now? It's calling us all to a higher order of being, and we are the ones. As Jean Houston says, do not be afraid, we were made for these times. Consciousness is awakening right now in each one of us, where time and space fall away and the eternal now begins to flower. It's so vast that the mind can't wrap itself around it. It's so loving that one lifetime can't probably encompass the depth of that love. And we are that. And so as we say yes to this emergence, and we say, have your way with me, then we invite the burgeoning awake awareness to just flower within our life. We begin to see relationships as sacred, all relationships. We begin to see that this spirit needs to create a dynamic flow with itself. And so that's why the one had to experience the many in the one, and the one in the many. So we rest with a grateful heart. I'd like you now, if your eyes are closed, to see an image of your father. And maybe there was another individual that you call your spiritual father, my teacher, for instance. I also see Ernest Holmes as a spiritual father. And notice what the transmission that your father did to you. For me, my father was the one that told me to not accept everything on blind faith, but to dare to question authority and to think for yourself. And so I'm totally grateful for his encouragement for me to question, to ponder, to inquire, to discover what was meaningful. And so as we become intimate with a memory, perhaps, from the past is informing the present. And even though they may not be here in form, they're still here in essence. And so we can feel their encouragement to always be true to yourself. My spiritual teacher, he was a deep lover of Emerson, and would say to us, beware when God unleashes an individual thinker on this planet, that God will not have herself made manifest by cowards. And so his very example was to find the courage to be a unique expression, not with conformity and consistency, which are the hobgoblin of little minds, but with an originality and an ability to be a conduit for spirit to express its beauty, its truth, through thoughts, through words, through a discovery process that's unique to each individual here on the planet. And so when we accept our rightful place in the universe, we know that the Father lives within us, just as the Mother lives within us. And then we become the Father to others, so that we might be that guiding force to help people find their way in the darkness, to validate that little child that we all are at some level, and to be a parent to that little child, so that when we experience fear, we can feel the embrace of this divine presence, which we'll call the Father, and we can be the jubilant and beholden son or daughter with this emerging energy of the Holy Spirit, all working together for the highest good of all beings. It's with gratitude and with playfulness that we enter into the dance together, emptiness dancing. And when we know that we are everybody and everything, then love begins to flower at such a quantum level that it only sees love because love has awakened. This is the Father's Day gift I would like to leave to all of you and say thank you, Daddy, for being there and being the inspiration that I needed and still need in this sweet unfoldment of truth. So all of you in virtual land and those of you here at the center, would you join with me in the heart salutation by saying, I honor you. I respect you. I love you. You are an aspect of myself. The beloved in me bows to the beloved in you. In this place we are one. And from that oneness, open your eyes, lift up your fingers, and let the light shine and go forth to do its good and perfect work in the world, knowing that it will be reflected back to you in many mysterious ways. So thank you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. More information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.